Okay, so before we begin then, let us all take a moment to pay homage to the supremely enlightened one, the fully awakened one, the most magnificent one. And upon doing that, we will observe the precepts and we shall continue with today's proceedings. Can you all hear me okay at the back? Okay.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Please repeat all together and after me. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sarana gamanam sampunnam panati pata veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Adinnadana veramani sikkhapadam samādhiyāmi. Kāmesu micchācārā veramani sikkhāpadam samādhiyāmi. Musāvādā veramani sikkhāpadam samādhiyāmi. Surāmeraya majja pamādaṭṭhānā veramani sikkhāpadam samādhiyāmi. Tisaranena saddhiṃ pañca sīlaṃ dhammaṃ sādhukaṃ surakkhitaṃ katvā appamādena sampādeta. In my lay life, I used to go to work, finish for the day, and I used to exchange with my colleagues. We had this lovely saying, another day, another dollar. Today I look at you and I look at him, and he reminds me another day, another chance to help innocent people free themselves from the suffering that they find themselves in. So that's what I have today been bestowed with. Another day, another chance. So I can help heal a few more hearts. And another chance for you to ensure that you get the most out of today by being here fully. It is one thing to be here, and it's another thing to be here fully. We are very fortunate, ladies and gentlemen, to come together like this, to be in the presence of noble companions, to be in and amongst yourselves, who have all come here with one purpose. Yes, you've all come from different walks of life, but today, under this one roof, we are all united, aren't we? You've set aside all your differences. You've forgotten all the ways in which you are different from one another. Man or woman, adult or child, black or white, rich or poor, matters not. Because under this one roof, in the presence of the Lord Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Mahasangha, we are all united because we have just sought refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. What does it mean to seek refuge in something? You know, people seek refuge. We call them refugees, don't we? Refugees. Some of you may even work with refugees to help them uplift their lives. I'm sure there will be those among you who had some experience working with refugees. Maybe here, maybe in other countries. A refugee is someone who is helpless. They rely on the help of others. Would you agree with that definition of who a refugee is? Therefore, they seek refuge. They seek refuge in a higher truth, in something bigger than them, in something greater than them, in something that is beyond them. They seek a helping hand to step up from wherever they are. I seek refuge, as I have just done with all of you. In fact, as we progress on this path, I assure you that you will begin to realize that there is no other refuge than the refuge of the Noble Triple Gem. Some of you will have begun to understand that. Some of you will pretty soon. It's fine to take your time. We are in no rush. In fact, the rush that we are in is the only problem that we seem to find ourselves in, isn't it? So we are in no rush, but we are all here with one purpose. So we are so fortunate to have this opportunity, to have the facility, to have good and kind-hearted people who are willing to extend what they have to allow us to be here today. There may be those who offered you a lift to get here today. Perhaps someone gave you an invite. Perhaps someone said, you know, there's this sermon that happens on a Sunday morning. I think you should come. Just come try it for one day. See whether you like it or not. Nothing ventured, nothing gained, they would have said. You don't have to pay either. It's free. Why is it free? We talked about this last time. Because the best things in life are... How much did you pay for your mother's love? How much? If you had to pay, how much would you have to pay? For a mother's love? Would you be able to afford it? Imagine that, the child coming into this world, and then to be united with its mother at the hospital, Right? Imagine the child was able to make sense of the world, right? And he was demanded a fee to be united with his mother. How much do you think he'd have to pay? Because it's not just the nourishment, just the protection that he gets. A mother is someone who cares about her child selflessly. She is willing to give herself up entirely, saving nothing for herself. You all have a mother, and so you know what I talk about. You know how much your mother dedicated her life to you, and perhaps still does. That is why we call her mother. What happens when your mother needs a refuge? Sometimes I ask our devotees who come to the monastery on a Saturday to our sermons, what happens when Superman needs a superhero? What happens when Superman needs saving? Now there are superheroes, right? We grew up learning about Superman and Batman and Spider-Man. But what happens when they need a hero? What happens when Superman gets angry and he has no control over that? A man who is angry is a man who has lost control of himself. What hope can we have of him having any reign or control over somebody else? It's so funny, isn't it, how when sometimes people get bothered, annoyed by somebody else, they point their finger at them and go, "Don't say that to me. Don't talk like that to me. Mind your language. How dare you do something like that? I don't like it when you do like that. Don't do like that again. Please don't say like that again." Annoyed. In other words, what they're saying is, please control yourself. Ironical, is it not? So why don't you control getting upset over it? When you're asking someone else to control their words, their speech, their actions, how about you take some of your own medicine? Why don't you just control yourself and not be angry about it, not be bothered by it? Easier said. But then that doesn't stop people saying it, does it? See, we are here to learn to tame ourselves, not anybody else. We go to school to learn how to tame others. We learn leadership skills. We learn management skills. We learn all these things. We learn science. We learn math. So that we know how to interact with the world. So that we can command the resources in the world. We can command people. We can command nations, we can command others, so that we can get them to behave in the ways that we want them to behave. That is why we learn. That is why we educate ourselves. When at school did you learn to tame yourself? Is there a lesson that you learn in school, how not to be angry? I ask you, did you have a lesson at school that said how not to be angry? I'll tell you, you had something like this. There probably might have been anger management classes. You can take a course on that. Anger management. What is management? Means you can't help being angry. Now that you are, let's just learn how to manage it. Yeah? Yes. But you don't have anger eradication classes, do you? If you find one, let me know. So we looked for one and we couldn't find one, so we thought we'll start one on a Sunday morning. And so here you are. This, ladies and gentlemen, is anger eradication class. How much might you have to pay for an anger management class? You might hire a top psychologist. People who understand how the mind works. Only they don't understand how they work. When they get angry. Don't you feel you're vulnerable? in the presence of someone who annoys you? Does that not bother you? You are bothered by the person who bothers you. My question is, does it not bother you that you are bothered? That you can be bothered? That you're vulnerable to anger? If you could fix that problem, couldn't you be with anybody? Couldn't you be with anyone and be okay? Does it not bother you that there are times when desire takes over your heart, when lust overcomes you? I don't mean in lewd ways, I mean, you know, just in very socially acceptable ways even. When it takes over you, everybody has a secret. I dare say everyone in this room has a secret. A secret that only you know. It's a secret that your mother doesn't know. A secret that your father doesn't know. A secret that your brother doesn't know. A secret that not even your wife knows. Perhaps not even your husband knows. Only you know. You take comfort in knowing that I am the only one who knows my secret. But it comes back time and time again and causes you regret. It gives you a headache, gives you a sleepless night. But in that moment, ladies and gentlemen, where it overcame you, you didn't know what to do. You were helpless. Give me a virtual nod. Don't actually nod, just give me a virtual nod. If what I speak rings a bell with you. At the monastery, I say, give me a virtual raise of hands. So you can engage with me, but you don't have to embarrass yourself. But I bet everyone has their hand raised up right now. And I don't mean that in an insulting way. I was there where you are today. I was helped because I sought refuge. Like I said, I'm just a very normal human being. I'm just a very normal person. I have come from the same life, the same walks of life as you have. That is why I said this is nothing magical. This is not a mystery. This is not a miracle. Understanding the truth is all that is required. And our purpose in coming here all that way is to share that truth with you. Because I know that it's going to be a heck of a ride for you to get to the monastery. If I had the choice, I'd have you come there and not bother coming here at all. I risk my life coming here, do you know that? Sometimes monks come up to me and say, Swaminarayan, please, is it okay if we went home just to see our grandparents? I tell them, Swaminarayan, think carefully before you make that choice. Your life is a precious one. Go because you have to, but don't go if you want to. Because after you get on those four wheels, you are taking a risk with something so precious. Remember how I used to help the granny across the street, but now I take cover? In some ways you might think, I'm more selfish than I used to be. I'm selfish so I can be selfless. I care a lot because I don't care at all. You'll start to read between the lines as you spend more time with me. Sometimes I'll say one thing but mean something completely different. If we are on the same wavelength, you'll understand exactly what I meant. So for that we have to tune in to the same station. But hey, that's a journey that we're on, eh? Getting to know each other. I'm enjoying this. I hope you will too. I'm enjoying this because this is not a laborious task for me. I'm enjoying this because I just come here and I don't have an agenda to speak to. I don't come here thinking this is what I have to tell you today. I come here and sit down, look at your faces, I look at his face, look at your face again, and he says, another day, no dollar. Another day, but no bother. And then I look at your faces and I think, how is it that I can be of service to mankind today? I try and look into your eyes and try and scan the room and see what might be the things that annoy you. What are your botherations? What are the things that might be getting on your nerves these days? I can't read minds. I cannot. But I trust in merit. I know that I can be a magnet for your merit power. In other words, if you have the merits to help you to earn what you have to hear before you leave this room today, I can be the radio that transforms that merit power into the truth that you need to walk out with here today. And that again is not a mystery. It's not a supernatural power that I possess. All I have is a simple heart which cares a lot. I've heard this lovely saying, and I think you'll agree with me. I don't care how much you know about me, because I know how much you care about me. You heard that before? Well, you've heard it now. I don't care how much you know about me, because I know how much you care about me. I would like for you to think of me in those ways. The truth is, ladies and gentlemen, you know, we might come here, meet like this for several weeks, months, years maybe. There are those who come to the monastery and they've been coming for God knows how long. I don't even know their names. I don't know where they come from. Sometimes people come and sit together, sometimes people sit apart. One week I think, oh, they must be husband and wife. The next week they don't look eye to eye. Then I think they have to be husband and wife. Sometimes they come with the young ones. They sit next to them. The other days they sit far away from them. Some might think they must be family. Because I know what family life is like. There are good days and even better days. You know, under a skin, we are all the same. All these differences that we see are just very superficial differences. Everyone suffers the same. Everyone grieves the same way. Everyone cries the same way when they are down. Everyone likes to smile. Everyone likes to be happy. They're all the same. Whether you're a king or a beggar, whether you're a rich man or a poor one, whether you're black or white, man or woman, as I said last week to you, you see a Swamin Mahanse here, I don't see you there. All I see is an ailing mind that can be helped because you're here today. You have come here with a body that you have to carry around with you. You've got no choice about it, and you can be in that until you pay your rent. Agree or not? Stop paying rent for 3 days and see what happens. What is the rent that you pay? Some of it you put in through your nose. That has to be paid almost every second, every couple of seconds. The rest of it you put in through your mouth. And the longest you can go without paying rent is how long? 2-3 days at most? Yeah? If you pass a week by without paying rent, what happens? Out and stay out. But despite all that effort that you have to make to carry this burden around with you, I'll call it a burden in my words. You might think, oh, this is a luxury, Swami. Fair enough. We'll carry on. We'll find out soon enough. Let time do its thing. And then you will begin to realize. There are already those among you in the audience who I can see are beginning to understand. It does not treat me like it did in my youth. After all these years, I have painstakingly, fed it, sheltered it, tended to it, fixed it when it broke, stood it up when it fell down, and rested it when it was tired? Is this how you treat me? There's plenty of evidence already in the room. I want to help you free yourself from that. Do you not want that? Who's not up for that? That you can give me an actual raise of hands. Because you don't have to, you know, bother yourselves. Who's not up for that? See, some of you are wearing masks. Having fun. A good 10 long years, my dad had to wear a cervical collar, just as the good lady over there is doing. I know how that feels like. I know the pain that he was in. I know how when it became unbearable, in no uncertain terms, he made it known to the rest of us at home that the pain was unbearable. And those days, I didn't know what to do to help him. I thought very soon I'm going to become a medical doctor and then I'm going to find out how to help every man and woman. Initially I thought, I want to become a cardiologist. Then I thought, but it's not just the heart that people have problems with. They have problems with their nerves and their brain, so I want to be a neurologist as well. And then I realized people also have problems with their ears, nose and tongues. And then I thought, well, throat. So I said, I want to become an ENT surgeon. All together. And then I realized there was this discipline called being a physician, where a general physician, you'd know about all of it, but not enough about all of it. So that wasn't enough either. I was heartbroken. There are so many people suffering out there. How come I can't lift myself up? How come I can't learn enough to help all of them? Only I could. I'd just chosen the wrong path. Until that story I related to you last week happened to me. Did I tell you I love hearing that story? So here's what happened. I don't want to see that lady suffering like that. So thank you for coming, madam. So I can look after you. Despite your situation, you've decided to come here today. Wow. Hats off to you. Because she could have easily chosen not to come in today. How foolish that might have been. Because here, I want to share with you how you can be free from it for good. I'm not against enjoying life. I encourage you to do so. Heck, I have more fun than you do. I have more fun in one day than you do in a whole year. Would you believe me? No, right? Wait and see. When you begin to realize how much fun Swami Nuance has in one day, you'll come begging for it. Just wait for the magic to happen. There's no rush. There's no rush. I'm a very greedy person. I'm greedy for happiness. I used to be happy indulging myself sensually. But I just couldn't get enough. You know, they say contentment is bliss. I said, to heck with that. I want more. I want more pleasure. I want more happiness. So I shared my part of my story with you last week. You know, I went around the world seeing things, listening to things, here, you know, enjoying things, tasting things, delighting myself in things, and I thought, is this all? Can't we have more? Some of the pleasures which you have come to accept and be content with, I wasn't. I looked up the richest man in the world, whoever he was at that time. And then I realized that the pleasures that he had was not enough. I thought, no, I'd not be happy with that. He seems to be, but I'm not. I want more. See, I'm very greedy. As I said, very soon you'll realize that I'm more selfish than most of you. I'm so selfish, so I can be selfless. Buddhist philosophy, not the religion. I'm not here to talk to you about religion. I'm here to talk to you about the science of Buddhism. What the Buddha realized under the tree. Not what he did from then on, setting up the sasana and so on. We can worry about that later. Remember I told you, last week I had to go up to Malwatta, Kandy, for the high ordination. So 7 of our monks received their high ordination. And another 12 will be receiving their high ordination again later on this month. And another 10 more will be receiving their high ordination later on, around August or just before that. So again, as usual, when we went in there, you know, these were the number of documents. This was this high up, they were stacked up. People who'd come because they wanted to disrobe. Monks who wanted to disrobe. And these were the number of people, you can't even see from where you are sat. New ordinations. This many disordains. This many new ordinations. Why? Because they come for the religion. I said, let's not come here for the religion. Let's come here for the philosophy. Once you get the philosophy, then you're not here because of anybody else. You're here because of you. It's not fun wearing a mask, is it? How about when you have to apply balm on your back, on your knees, and you struggle turning on the bed? Have you not had that day yet? I say yet, in block capitals, yet. Well, it's coming to all of you, coming to all of us, myself included. See, I can't stop the pain coming to you, because now that you have brought this package with you, I can't stop the pain coming to you. But here's what I can do for you. I can help you internalizing that pain. Dukkha is one, dukkha is another. I can help you stop internalizing the pain that you experience. That I can do. You know, pain becomes 1,000 times more painful when you think it's you who's hurting. When you feel that this pain I experience, it magnifies that pain. The day will come soon enough, ladies and gentlemen, if you come here religiously, pardon the pun, if you come here regularly and allow me to help you realize that all you experience is a pain. It's not your pain. But right now the feelings that you experience are yours. Or at least you feel that way. When you're happy, you feel you're happy, right? I'm happy. Today, perhaps you'll struggle to understand if I said these words out loud to you. It's not that you are happy. Happiness has happened. I'm going much further than I hoped I would, but I'll come back, don't worry. I'm giving you a taste of what's yet to come. These are some of the things you'll hear on a Saturday morning, because there we have people who've been coming along for many years now. This is like any journey. right? One step at a time, but I'm giving you what else you will be able to hear in the future, just to keep you interested. Today, every material possession that you have, you can't stop feeling that it belongs to you. Whose car? Or rather, your car, whose is it? Swami knows about the question, has the answer. Who does your car belong to? Duh. The question has the answer. I say no. See, this car that you think is yours, okay, let's take the car back to the manufacturer and ask them, did you manufacture this car for me? What might they say? What might they say? You know what they say? Who are you exactly? When I don't even know who you are, why would I make a car for you? Is probably what they would say. So they never made a car for you. At what point did the car become yours? I take a car, I mean, we can take anything, but let's take a car because most of you will probably have a car, right? When did that car become yours? Just think about the process of that car becoming yours. You know, the story will be something like this, okay? Might not be exactly, but something like this. Perhaps you walked into a showroom, yeah? You had your plastic money, or maybe you had a piece of paper on which you could write a number and sign it and hand it over to them, or maybe you had a bank account so you could transfer, or maybe you had the cash in a suitcase. Whatever the case might have been, you walked into the showroom, you looked around, you said, I'd like that one, please. And ask, can I go for a test drive? He says, sure. Is the car yours too? No, it's beginning to become yours though. Where? In the steering wheel, right? No? Driver's seat. Did I get that right? No? Passenger seat. It's beginning to become yours, right? No? Where? In your mind. That's where it's beginning to become yours. Now, any good salesperson who's worth his salt will say all those lovely things that will make you feel that it is more yours than it is his. He'll say, sir, look at you in that car. Oh my, oh my, oh my. You look dapper. Look at that. You look so smart and elegant. Just you driving around in that car. All the eyes that will be looking at you as you pull it out of the driveway. All the onlookers. Who will wish, oh, if I had one of those. So elegant. Only a man with high taste would want to drive in something like this. Sir? What's that he said at the end? Sir? What's all that for? I'm here to burst your bubbles, okay? I burst more balloons than I blow up. You'll have to forgive me for that, because I'm here to speak the truth and nothing but the truth. As harsh as it might be, you've never heard the truth before. So brace yourselves as I give you the truth, 1 ounce of it at a time. Because I care about you. Enough of people putting you up on high pedestals and glorifying you and saying that you are so and so, oh my God, you are the bee's knees. Never before have you seen a greater man. If you've not heard these stories, you will soon enough. Enough of all that nonsense. Under this skin of ours, we are all the same. But people will blow your trumpet. They'll sing hymns, they'll praise you and they'll honor you. Don't fall for it. Let them do it. You don't have to stop them. Let them do it. You will know this best of all, because whenever you come here and you tell me, Swami Nuhanse, you are the best Swami Nuhanse in the whole wide world, I say, yes, madam. I let you have that. I let you indulge in that. Not because I accept a word you say, but because it enables you to engage in merit. That's why. Because in your heart, as your heart fills with respect, devotion, honor, these are things that will see you well. Respect and honor for those who deserve it is one of the meritorious deeds. That's why we respect our parents, we respect our elders, our teachers. To have that feeling in your heart of devotion and piety towards those who deserve it is a very meritorious deed. But believe you me, ladies and gentlemen, I don't take one word of it back home with me. All of the praise and the honor that you lay at my feet, when I stand up and walk away, I offer it at the altar and walk away. None of it belongs to me. Hear me. Answer this question for me. If you saw me in a pair of trousers, would you worship me? No. Who does the worship belong to then? Who does your veneration belong to? You know to whom? This robe. Who does the robe belong to? He who gave me the robe. He lent it to me. He didn't give it to me. He lent it to me. He said, take it, do what you have to do, do your job, and nothing more, and nothing less. Go serve mankind. As you heal yourself, heal as many hearts as you possibly can. And when you're done, give it back. I have borrowed this robe, and I have borrowed my arms full. Wouldn't I be a fool to think that your worship belongs to me? See, in the same vein, ladies and gentlemen, I speak to you. Don't let them fool you. In this world of, I'll say lightly, business, people's coming together are transactional. You scratch my back, I scratch yours. People only scratch your back because you agree to scratch theirs. It is not because people are bad. It's not because people are vile or vicious. It's because hurt people hurt people. I hope you had some time to reflect on your homework from last week. You know, when someone is destitute, when someone is helpless, they will do anything to get that help they need. Just ask yourselves, put yourself in those situations. Go back, take a walk in the path of life. And remind yourself those times when you needed something, how desperately you went and sought, beseeched that help. Remember how you begged for it. All honor and pride at that moment goes out the window because you want it so badly. When you wanted a job, remember the first time you got a job, your first job? I remember that time when I got my first job. My first job was working at a newsagent's. When I was just at college, I worked at a newsagent's. Selling things, learning how the world works, and earning my pocket money. Because I didn't want to bother my parents. Even at that point, at that time, I thought, you know, they've done enough of me. I'm a man who can stand up on his own 2 feet. I've got my arms, I've got my legs, I've got a head straight. I know a thing or two. Why should I have to bother my parents? Let me try and do what I can to chip in. And so I did. Every month I'd earn myself a decent 200 to 300 pounds just working at the shop agents, the news agents. I'd do a newspaper round every once in a while. I enjoyed that because I could do something for my family. I thought I was the one paying the bills. So mother accepted, you know, whatever I earned, and I went and said, "Mama, use this to pay the bills." She said, "Oh, okay, put that. Thank you." I think she probably put it in the drawer somewhere, and then forgot about it. Or maybe she just went and put it into my bank account. But she was so kind enough to give me the feeling that I was the one who was paying the bills at home. But, you know, I can never say enough about parents and teachers. And from time to time, please allow me the liberty to share some of my own experiences. Because as I do so, I'm sure you will have your own experiences that will come afresh to your mind. And rejoice in them, ladies and gentlemen. You're entitled to. You're entitled to rejoice in the good deeds, in the great things that your parents have done for you. Every time you think of that and every time you rejoice in it, I allow you to do so because it earns you merits. It's a meritorious deed. Just to be grateful. Gratitude itself is a meritorious deed. Just to be grateful. And who better than for your teachers and your parents? So allow me from time to time. I remember to this day how my mother used to wash the clothes at home with her own bare hands. Not because she couldn't afford a washing machine. But you know what? She made me think that we couldn't. So there were four of us at home, mother, Amma, Appachi, Malli and myself. So every weekend she would take the clothes into the washing room, into the bathroom, and she would wash them. She would ask me to come and watch her. I know your stories will be quite similar in many ways, if not in every way, in many ways. I remember the lessons your father taught you, sir. She made me watch how she washed the clothes. She made me sit down. I had a little bench, a little stool, sit down, and she made me watch how she washed the clothes. And how she would wipe the sweat off her forehead. Every time giving me the impression that life is not easy. She could buy herself a washing machine quite comfortably. But you know what she did? She waited until I earned my first salary working at the newsagents and buy her that washing machine. That was the first thing I bought with the money that I'd earned. A washing machine for my mother. Now this is not to say that I'm such a nice son. That's not what this is for. I'm saying look at what our parents have done for us. As I share this story with you, I'm sure you will have 100 stories that you can relate. Look at what our parents have done for us. She taught me that in life you don't get what you desire, you only get what you deserve. So you have to work for it. And I felt over the moon. Can you imagine that? A boy, you know, 18, 19 years of age, his first salary, he buys his mother a washing machine. It was a surprise as well. She knew it all the way. She knew what was going to happen. She knew where I was looking. I got the catalogue. I was looking through the pages. She knew I'd call the drivers, the delivery. She knew all of it. She pretended she didn't know any of it. I'm sure you'll have plenty of stories like that. She grounded me. And later on when I began to understand the Dhamma, I realized all this putting up on pedestals. All this singing praises. All of that is just because They want their back scratched. Again, I don't mean it in a bad way. I mean it in the way of I mean it in a way where I want you to think why people have to resort to that. Because they're helpless. Because when they're helpless, people need help. When they're destitute, they need refuge. Today, this morning, we started this program by seeking refuge. And I asked you, do you understand what is meant by seeking refuge? We have all come here seeking refuge. Because we have all come here having realized that there is still something that remains unfulfilled in our hearts. Despite everything that you have to your name, despite everything that belongs to you, there is still something that remains unfulfilled. You are not content, are you? Honestly? Give me that virtual nod again. Just a virtual one. Ah, okay, I'll close my eyes. Now give me a real one. Dear ladies and gentlemen, there is nothing you could do that would embarrass you in front of me. I promise you that. There is nothing you can do. You can come here and walk naked. I won't be embarrassed. You can come in front of me and tell me every secret that you've held so dear in your life. I'd be fine with that. Because I don't see a bad man. I don't see a bad woman. All I see is the product of circumstances. The product of circumstances. If I could be disheartened, if I could be discouraged by listening to someone's story, by this point, I'd have left my robes and probably ended up in Angodo somewhere. Because every living, breathing soul that walks through the gates of our monastery, they bring with them a story. And those who come along will know that every week we have about 1,000 men and women just like yourselves who walk in through those gates. And each of them, they bring a story. Why would someone walk into a monastery? It's not for the food. Why does someone walk into the salon? For lunch? No, because they need their hair done. So why does someone walk into a temple? Because there's a burning fire that they don't know what to do with. Don't you agree? I mean, there's always a purpose with wherever we go, right? You go to the playground to play. You go to the restaurant to eat, have a meal. You go to school to learn. You go to work to earn. You go to the temple to stop the burn. Most of the time, who do you see in temples on a Poya day? Young youths, full of life and vitality, who do you see? You in 10 years, right? Or you in 20, maybe 30. Most of the time you see whom? The elderly. Does that not beg a question? Why, after having lived 60 years, 60 full years, if you ask them, there'll be mothers, there'll be fathers, there'll be professionals who'll have reached the peak of their professions, and you see them in the temple, there'll be powerful men and women who now seem powerless. Guru Swami Nuhansay, my teacher, always reminds me, don't fall for these traps, because people will use you like a tissue paper. How does one use a tissue paper? You take it out of the box, you wipe your dirty hands with it, and then you do what with it? Put it in your pocket, out of gratitude, for all that it has done for you? What do you do? Put it on the altar and hold joysticks? What do? You put it in the trash. And look back at it again? No. Move on. Let me give you another convincing argument. I know the stories of some of your parents because on occasions you have shared them with me. Let's take a late parent, maybe a mother or a father. They're no more. In their time, how many men, women and children did they serve? Just think of a number. If your father was a doctor, for instance, he would have treated many hundreds, if not thousands, of patients. Yeah? If your mother was a teacher, she would have taught many hundreds, if not thousands, of students. Etc., etc., etc. Okay? Now they are no longer. How many people do you think go looking for them? Go to the cemetery, buy their tombstone and lay down flowers in their name? Tell me. You do it. Still. But what about those people who made use of their useful life? Perhaps your father was the best surgeon around. And there was a patient who had a very complex surgery, and it was your father who saved his life. At the point he was treated, he thanked him profusely and said, "You saved my life, sir. Without you, I wouldn't be alive today." The man was cured. He went back home. A year passed. Perhaps he sent a letter, a thanking letter, the first year. After that, life goes on. Did he come to the funeral? Today, every year at his death anniversary, you give a dani. You do an almsgiving and you transfer merits. Do you think the man who your father healed doesn't merit transfer at the end of the day? Before he goes to bed? Do you think he does a merit transfer? At least on the anniversary of his surgery? Do you think he does? Are you so naive? You know that doesn't happen, right? But if your father had asked him, "If you want me to do that surgery, you have to do a merit transfer. You have to give me a meal. You have to do this, you have to do that. I call the shots and you do it." He would have done any of that because he wanted his back scratched. Then some of you will have parents who made history. Some of you will have parents who built this country up from what it was. Perhaps there will be those who fought for freedom. Do you think on the anniversary of our freedom, your father is remembered? You remember him still, because he was your father, that's it. So if that is what happened to your father, ... what's going to happen to the son? And what's going to happen to the daughter? The sons and daughters I'm looking at right now. But while we are here, we do our service to humanity. My point is this. I don't expect any of you to think anything of what I have done for you today or in the many years to come. After we've left, we've departed. That's fine. But what I need you to understand is, don't fall for that trap. When they come and sing praises that you're the next best thing to slice bread, don't bite that bread. It's stale. Don't fall for that. Remember, for a back to be scratched, another back has to be scratched. This is not that from now on, "God, Lord, you know, I thought people were so kind and so generous. I hate mankind from now on. How vicious and vile they are." No, that is not what this is for. If that were the case, ladies and gentlemen, why would I go on an arms round looking for people who need help. Why would I come here all the way from the monastery? Looking for people who need help. I told you, come with empty pockets. Leave with a full mind and a full heart. Engage in service, but expect nothing in return. But it's difficult to do. Because it's in our human nature to expect something, always, in return. Sometimes that expectation can be as simple as a smile. I helped him, he didn't even smile at me. I did all that for him, and he didn't even say thank you. How rude! So then you did it for what? The thank you. See, you wanted your back scratched. Don't do it for anything. Just do it for yourself. Do it for the merits. Whatever good deed you do, make this your life's philosophy. You know, from time to time I'll give you things, right? Jot it down somewhere, or maybe, you know, jot it in the back of your mind so you don't forget it. There'll be some really simple principles that I'll be sharing with you from time to time. I don't have a list written down somewhere, so when it comes, it'll come. Hold them true to your heart and live by them. Trust me, if you do so, you will enjoy the same bliss that I do today. Like I said, you don't enjoy the bliss that I do in one day, in a whole year. But you can. Soon enough you can. I'm here to help you do that. So only do it for yourself. Don't expect anything in return. If you walk up to a beggar and give him something, don't expect him to say, "Thank you, Nona." Don't expect that. I mean, how cheap do you need to be to give, what, say, 500 rupees, 100 rupees, and in return expect, "Thank you, Nona"? Is that the exchange rate these days? Let them be cheap, don't you be cheap. Don't exchange what you give for a thank you. Those are just two simple mere words. Don't exchange it for that. Expect something bigger, something greater, something larger than life. I told you, I don't charge you a penny, but from the moment you started listening to this sermon, I've been charging you and you don't even know it. I charge by the word. I don't want you to come and I don't expect you to come and say thank you. You can. And you're welcome. But I don't expect to thank you. It's kind of you to leave a glass of water here. But should you decide you don't want it, that's fine as well. I'll bring one when I come from the monastery. Because I didn't come here expecting to exchange what I have to offer for something so cheap as a thank you, for a smile, or you're so great, Swami Nuhansa. I don't expect any of that, because I don't exchange it for that sort of mere, you know, those meager little rates. I expect it for one thing and one thing alone, something priceless, that is Nibbana. I want you to think like me. That is what this program is about, isn't it? It is the way you think that you are. You are the way you think. There's a saying, you are what you eat. Yes, if you want to look at it that way. You can eat through two orifices. There's one under your nose and there's one above your eyes. Or through your ears. You are what you eat. If you eat good food, you'll be healthy. If you listen to good Dhamma, you'll be healthy. So you are what you eat. You are what you think. You are your thoughts. You become who you think. What you think. So I encourage you, I invite you, ladies and gentlemen, to start thinking like me. That's not to say, let's go when I leave back to the monastery. You can remain lay individuals. What I want you to start to do is to adopt an attitude of a monk. Enjoy the lifestyle of a lay person, perfectly fine. But begin to adopt the attitudes of a monk. What I shared with you was one of those attitudes. We give, expecting nothing in return. Isn't that a good philosophy for life? Because when you expect something, isn't there the opportunity for something much worse than that? It starts with a D, ends with a T. What do you think it is? Disappointment. You know how the word is made up? When you make an appointment, then it is dissed. To diss something is when it's not kept to. When someone ignores or neglects it. So when an appointment is dissed, that's a disappointment. An appointment that you mentally keep with something or someone, you're just asking for trouble when you do that. So adopt that as a philosophy in life. Try to do it. Begin with the small things in life. But if someone says thank you, you don't have to say, don't mention it. I'm not a big fan of that either. Because you know, when someone is grateful for something, that's a virtue. Gratitude is a virtue. If someone says thank you, say wholeheartedly, you're welcome. Allow them the privilege to say thank you. Because in this day and age, ladies and gentlemen, most people don't know that they even have to be grateful. Because where does food come from? The kitchen, right? Yeah, that's what's happened to our country. What people don't understand is how the food got to the kitchen. That is why gratitude is lost. When we drive around, you know, as we pass the villages, sometimes we see the paddy fields. You have no idea how much I think of those farmers. It is down to their sweat, toil and tears that today we have a full stomach. ₹500 cannot buy you a meal. That's the price you pay at the shop. But for ₹500, do you think they're going to go and plow the fields for you? And till the soil for you? And sow the seeds for you? And reap the crop for you? You think for ₹500 they're going to do all that? Of course not. I say 500 because that's the last time I bought something for. I don't know how much is how much is a meal these days. More like 50,000? I have no idea. Thanks to you. I don't know how much things cost these days. I don't know how much a bottle of water costs these days. So right, ₹500. You can't. You think they can transport all that from the paddy field to the shop where you went and bought it for ₹500? No, then you tell me, Swaminathan, but that's collective buying power. Yeah. You know too much for your own good, that's what. You know, when the waiter at a restaurant comes to you and brings the bill, right? And you pay the bill, why do you normally tip the waiter? Why? Today it may be because it's customary. It's customary to tip the waiter. It's rude not to. Perhaps that is why today some people do that. But I think we don't need to be so narrow-minded about it. Let's understand why we do that. One can serve, but serving with a smile is something else. What you have, ladies and gentlemen, is a waiter who is just as human as you are, so they have the same problems that you do. Today you have come to the restaurant to eat because your wife decided she wasn't going to cook for you. Perhaps because you said something nasty. And she said, fine, go eat yourself then. You know, he's also a married man, that waiter. He's also got children. He's also got problems. He also goes through the same vicissitudes in life as you do, but still, he wears a smile on his face to delight you. You pay what it says on the bill for the food. You tip the waiter because you can't give enough for the smile that he puts on his face to delight you. Service with a smile. That in itself, it's not just a smile. Think about the feeling behind the smile. Some might do it because, you know, they're expected to at the job. You have to serve with a smile. But I don't think everyone's like that. I think there are people out there, professionals out there, good, hardworking people out there who serve with a smile because they care. Aren't you someone like that? So are you the only people in the world who are like that? No, if there's one like you, there's more like you. There'll be teachers here. You teach your subject matter to your students, but don't you do it with a smile? That smile may not be very obvious on your face, but there's always a smile in your heart because you care. How do you pay for that? What is the currency to pay for that? How do you reconcile that account? You might think, Swami Nasa, what are you talking about? Are you not going to talk to us about Nibbana today? This is Nibbana. This is practical Nibbana. You read the sign out there, right? What did it say? A step by step. What approach? Practical approach to Nibbana. Nibbana is not a scholar's job. You can't be a scholar and go to Nibbana. Well, you can be a scholar in something else, but when it comes to Nibbana, you can't take a scholarly approach to it. You have to take a practical approach to it. Because you see, Nibbana is not something that you can go and get. Nibbana is something that comes to you when you are ready. So in the books of the Tripitaka, you are not going to find Nibbana. You'll be like, what? But isn't that where it is contained, all the scriptures, all the sayings of the Buddha? Yes. If that were the case, everyone who's been involved in printing the Tripitaka, typesetting the Tripitaka, binding the Tripitaka, packaging it, boxing it and selling it, they should all have become arahants by now, shouldn't they? If Nibbana is in the Tripitaka, it's not enough to read the letter. You have to get the essence of it. You've all read, what do you call them, self-help, positive thinking books? Most of you will have. Stephen Covey's, the likes of him, Zig Ziglar. These people who've gifted mankind with thinking behaviors and patterns that are conducive to one's productivity. They wrote the book, fair enough. But what about the people who typeset it? How to become a millionaire? There'll be a book typeset by a poor person. I have a point. How to become a millionaire? There's someone who proofreads it. If he were a millionaire, he wouldn't be sat there proofreading it. He'd be making his millions. I've not seen a millionaire proofreading a book before it goes to the press. So do you see, reading it letter by letter is not sufficient for someone to become the essence of what those words contain, because it's an internal transformation. A million is what comes to you when you have the mindset of a millionaire. It's not something you go after. Folks, if I charged you for this stuff, you'd be bankrupt by now. Wouldn't you agree? These are the kind of things, I mean, I'm talking things related to Nibbana, but I'm actually not really talking to you the spice or the essence of Nibbana just yet. But I will get to that. Okay. But the things I'm sharing with you, especially to have young children here, good Lord, how fortunate they are, dear parents. You have been very wise to bring them along. These young minds, to hear these things, you have to go to seminars and pay top dollar to listen to these things. I'm not even talking about Buddhist philosophy here. I'm talking about philosophies for life. You have to speak to a millionaire, to a billionaire, and they'll teach you how to become a billionaire. A millionaire is not someone who goes after the million. He waits, and the million comes to him. We don't work hard, we work smart. That's why in life, as my mother once taught me, you don't get what you desire, you get what you deserve. When you are deserving of something, it comes to you. How does the wind blow? Madam? Sir? How does the wind blow? When there's an area of low pressure, you don't have to go get the wind. It comes to you. Meaning, when you are deserving of something, it comes to you. There's plenty in this world. They're just flowing from hand to hand to the hand that deserves it. Nibbana is the same. There is Nibbana everywhere. It's just next to you, see? I can see it from here, can't you? It's right under your nose. Have a feel. I don't know whether that is why some people breathe in and breathe out. Nibbana is right under your nose. It's just there. So why have I not yet attained Nibbana, you might ask? Because first you have to become deserving of it. Have you ever heard the saying, the Buddha or the Bodhisattva sat under the Bodhi tree where he found Nibbana or where he realized Nibbana? He realized Nibbana. So he didn't find it at the tree, at the root of the tree, did he? He realized it. You find something you don't have. You realize something that you have. You realize, okay. I have it. I've always had it. That is what Nibbana is. So you see, I'm not here. I don't bring Nibbana from the monastery and give it to you. It's not in the sandwiches that you get in the afternoon. We don't pack it up in the sandwiches. I don't have it with me. It's not in this fan. So when I bless you, you don't get a bit of Nibbana. So you don't have to come and sit where you feel the wind blowing on the fan. No. I don't bring Nibbana with me. I help you realize it because you bring it with you. You bring Nibbana with you. You've got it with you right now. So please don't give me the credit of giving you Nibbana. I can't give it to you. I can only help you realize it. But to realize it, we must become deserving of it. And then we begin to realize. For that, an internal transformation has to happen. Our thinking patterns must change. Do you know why rich people are rich? Did I ask you this question last week? No. Maybe somewhere else, because I've been doing a few sermons in some schools lately. So I've been talking to some grade 9s. I asked them, you want to become rich one day, yeah? She said, yes. I said, why are rich people rich? She said, because they have money. I said, no, Dua. If you think rich people are rich because they have money, right? If someone takes on board that mindset, do you know what they'll be doing from then on? They'll go looking for money. they'll kill for money. They'll steal for money, because the possession of money, if they believe, is what makes someone rich. That is wrong. Rich people are rich because they give. That is what I taught her then. Rich people are rich because they give. So then why are poor people poor? Have you ever seen a poor man come and say, I've got something, shall I give it to you? When you stop by the traffic lights, have you seen a poor man come and say, they knock on the window, no, the shutter, you lower it, and he says, Madam, I have 500 rupees, would you like it? Is that what you've heard? No, what do? They ask. They beg. And that is why they're poor. That is why they will always be poor. Because what they have is a poor man's mindset. A poor man's mindset soon enough bring a poor man's pocket. A rich man's mindset will soon enough bring a rich man's pocket. If you are rich today, because it is because you have a rich mindset. That is because you give. If you are rich, you know you give. Not just money. Money is just one way one could be rich. But what do you think I am, rich or poor? I don't have a cent to my name though. I am rich in whatever I give. That is what I am rich in. You will be rich in whatever you give. So in whichever way you are rich today, in that way you have what? Given. Yes or no? If you feel loved, ladies, gentlemen, if you feel loved, if you feel rich in love, I'm always so loved by my family, by my friends. Everyone says, you know, they dote on me. They care about me so much. Ask yourself, is that not what you give to others all the time? Don't people feel just, you know, such a blessing to be around people like you, because they feel so loved and so cared for? If you are rich in health, that is what you give to others. Perhaps that is what you give to others by example. Because giving doesn't have to necessarily mean extending your hand and say, take it. Doesn't have to be like that. I'm talking about a mindset. You can give by example. You can give by advice. Can't you? What matters is not how big or how small. It is the intention that matters. So this is another philosophy for life then. Whatever you want in life, give it. But I know you have a problem now. But, Swami Mahasaya. How can I give what I don't have in the first place? Swami Mahasaya, I'm poor. I struggle to make ends meet. I struggle to keep the wolf from the door. Swami Mahasaya, how can I give? I barely make ends meet. How can I give? For that you've got to read the book called The Richest Man in Babylon. I didn't fall from the sky, ladies and gentlemen. I came on a journey. That is why I stopped when I found the destination. I have read all those books. I have listened to all those speakers. I have been to the conferences and the seminars. I have listened to the successful people in life. I have listened to all the motivational speakers. You name them, I can tell you exactly what they said. Because I was someone who wanted to become successful and reach the pinnacle of success in my life. By 40, I had retirement in my mind. You know this. In The Richest Man in Babylon, they say, 10% of whatever you earn, charity. So if all you earn is 10 rupees, that is all you have to your name, don't spend 11. Most people are poor because they spend money that they don't have to buy things they don't want, to impress people they don't know. Agreed? What a broken philosophy. So you end up with broken lives. If you take for a moment and think about the things you have at home now that you really have never used since you bought it. Perhaps even with money that you didn't have. To impress someone that you didn't even like. But things can change. We are here to change, aren't we? Are you here because you know you are right? Or are you here because I may know a thing or two, Swami knows, but there are a few things in life where I think I've gotten wrong. Is that why you're here? Hopefully for the latter. That is why I'm always with my teacher at his feet. I'm very wary that I might make mistakes because I'm not the perfect one. There's only one perfect one. Oh, I am imperfect. That is my middle name. So, a good philosophy for life. Whatever you want, be someone who gives it. If you have little, give that little. Why do I go on that dance round? You've got to ask. You've got to think about it. I don't come to you because you have. You don't just have the means, but you also have the means to give. If you choose, you could go to the temple of your choice, maybe not just in Sri Lanka. If you wanted, you could travel to the other side of the world and give an almsgiving to the biggest temple in the world somewhere. If you wanted, you could do that. But what about the poor people who live in the shanties? They can't even pay the bus fare to get to the temple. So I go to them because they can't come to me. You don't come to me on Saturday, so I come to you on Sunday. Until you realize that trip is worth making. No rush. Take our time. You see these five fingers? One day the thumb thought, I should go reach the middle finger. So he prepared himself and he set a foot. He moved a step forward. He said, oh, you've moved as well. Let me try again. He moved another step forward. Trust me, I'm just moving my thumb. I'm not intentionally moving any of the other fingers. I'm just moving my thumb. Can you believe me as I say so? Please. Yeah. Let's move the thumb one step further. This guy is trying to reach this guy. When do you think that's going to happen? Not in this eon. So for any hope for this guy to ever come into contact with this guy, there's only one thing that can happen. What do you think that is? He has to come down to his level. This is what all great people do. They come down because they know where they've been. They know where they were. And they know that all they're doing is doing what others did for them. That is how the world works. If you are a teacher in a classroom teaching your students, do you expect them to understand everything you do, or do you break it down and simplify it so that you go down to their level and teach them until step by step, day by day, year by year, they come up to your level? That's what you do, right? Mahatma Gandhi once said, the measure of greatness of a society can be seen in how they care for the most vulnerable. This is what's happening. This guy is the most vulnerable, deprived, underprivileged, challenged. See? Who comes down the furthest? Who has to come down the furthest? Little finger, index finger, ring finger, or the middle finger? That's why it's the tallest. That's why he's the tallest. He's willing to come down and bend down the furthest. That's why he's the tallest. Just look at your palm, you'll learn a lot of lessons. This is the palmistry that I teach. I don't know the science behind the lines on your hands. I don't know that science, but I know this science. Life has so many lessons to teach us if only we are willing to learn. As they say, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. From where? He was always there. Parents, do you think you should have sent your children to a tuition class this morning, or what do you think? Or perhaps, what do you think? Waste of time here, or maybe they should have been in science class today? You know, these are the things that will help them become great men and women. Because this changes the way you think, which in turn changes your behaviors. It influences your habits. What makes a great man? It's the habits. Not big things done one day, little things done every day. If ever you've become successful in life, it's because you did little things every day consistently. There's something called the compound effect. Even Nibbana, do it little by little. You might think, aren't we too old, Swami knows? Have we got the time to be doing it little by little? Better done, do little and achieve something than try and do it all and achieve nothing. For as long as you're here, I promise, I will do my part to help you walk this path. That is a promise I give you. For as long as you're here, I will do that. Whether you're old or you're young, don't you worry. Yesterday morning sermon, we talked a lot about the environment in which you need to find yourselves in. Environment is everything. If you're in the right environment, all of the factors that you need will bring you there. See where you are today right now. You're in the presence of noble friends who've come here with one purpose. When they are here, they're not going to talk to you about what you did, you know, where you went out last night, what happened at the party. They're not going to ask you those things. Because here you're in noble companionship. This environment will help you one step at a time to change your thinking patterns. As I said, Nibbana is an attitude. When you attain Nibbana, ladies and gentlemen, nothing in the world will change. All that will have changed is you. When you change, the whole world changes. That is why it's called insight. Initially, you just open your eyes and you look, and that is sight. But when you open your wisdom eye, you can look within and you see it through insight. So allow the transformation to happen. Let it take its course. Let's not rush. But there is one thing you have to do. Bring yourself here. That, of course, I can't do. I've come that far. You can come this far, can't you? So that is why I have a lot of respect. When everything was fighting against her, she's decided to come here today. Perhaps there was on one occasion she thought, should I with this? What will people think? What's easy to do is easy not to do. That's why many people don't do it. What's easy to do is easy not to do. It's easy to adopt the good habits, but it's easy not to. But the good lady has decided to come here today, so I have a duty now to fulfill. I want you to be able to live full lives, rich in whatever you fancy. If you take these principles, ladies and gentlemen, you can be rich in whatever you fancy. If it's Nibbana you decide to seek one day, then that you will be rich in. If it's not Nibbana you're interested in just now, whatever you decide to be rich in, if you apply these principles, you will be rich. That can be wealth, that can be health. If it's Nibbana, when it eventually you feel, yep, you know what, I think it's time I started working on my Nibbana, If you apply these principles, you will attain Nibbana. Now, what is Nibbana? That's a big question. What is Nibbana? Because we need to know where we are heading before we get there. So we know where to set our bearings, right? Oh, and by the way, please do understand that this is not a motivational speech. Although you may be motivated, the intention is not necessarily to motivate. I always go on about this. There are four things that one needs to become successful. Number one, you need inspiration. Inspiration is getting a clear picture of where you need to go. Which direction, north or south? Which direction do I go? That inspiration will do for you. Secondly, you need motivation. Motivation will get you up on your feet. Because knowing where you need to go is not enough. You have to get up and put that first step forward. You need motivation. Thirdly, you need discipline. What does discipline do? You know, the first step was easy. The second step is a little bit more difficult. The third one gets a little bit more difficult, and the fourth one, and so on, until you know what happened with your gym subscription. Remember? Remember at the start of the year you had those New Year goals, and one of them was to go to the gym regularly, right?
Yeah.
Remember that bicycle machine you have at home? The running machine you have at home? Whatever happened to that? Today that's where you hang your clothes out to dry, huh? One reason and one reason alone. You like the discipline. That's all. Because you were inspired. So you thought, I have to get fit, I need to get healthy, looking like this, like a pumpkin, you know, I can't carry on like this forever, so I better do something about it. So you went there, you got the bicycle machine, you brought it home, you got the gym subscription, all of those because you were motivated enough. But where you lacked was the discipline. You didn't keep on going. And finally, you need something else. It's called determination. Usually discipline stops because determination is lost. What is determination? It's when times are tough. When you come across the rough patches in life. When everything seems against you. The strength of mind that is required to keep that step forward even on that day. When everyone is saying, nah, it's too cold today. It's too hot today. It's raining. Let's not bother today. We can catch up next week. Not heard that? You're not Martians, are you? We all live on Earth, huh? You live among Earthlings, yeah? You know, most of the time you'll hear such stories, ladies and gentlemen, because there's only 1% of people who think like this. The remaining 99%, they'll always be there complaining about the 1%. Because that is what they know best. Anyone can complain. I used to have that list. When I was younger, I used to have that list. I said the economy was the problem. I couldn't become successful because the economy, bad economy, you know. Politics. Because someone came and said, sometimes when friends came around, sometimes my father's friends came around, you know, they sat around the dinner table, as they do. What do they start talking about? How do we change the economy of America? We are 1,000 miles away, but people want to change the economy of America. They want to oust the president of America and appoint a new one. All that they do from just sitting around the dining table, watching TV. One of the biggest misused instruments that mankind has ever invented. The television. We'll talk about that another day. Because I have War and Peace to talk to you about the television. We'll talk about that another day. One of the most misused devices that mankind has ever invented. There's no such thing as a bad invention, but in the bad hands, even the best things can be used for chaos and destruction. Nuclear fusion and fission were not invented to destroy mankind, but in the wrong hands, that's what it did. If you've done any history, world history, and studied a little bit of that, you know these things. What was I talking about? I lost my train of thought now. That's it. I don't come with an agenda. I look at your faces, and if you're like, yeah, so I mean, I just carry on. What was I talking about, madam? Television, yes. What happened before television? Black and white. Before color television. Determination. Thank you, madam. Thank you. Determination, yes. So determination is required when things get tough. Because what people don't realize is, when the going gets tough, very soon the tough gets going. But people don't wait for that to happen. I'll say that again. When the going gets tough, pretty soon the tough will get going. But you just have to hang in there. When I first sat down for meditation, oh boy, that's the last thing I wanted to do. But I hung in there. I hung in there. Got my teacher's advice, and I hung in there. I remained. I waited. Because the going got tough. You know, toughness is where life shows you, here's your limit. Break it. At our monastery, we teach not just the Dhamma. We are 450 strong today, ladies and gentlemen, because we speak the Dhamma, the truth, but also these philosophies that completely transforms mindsets. Because, you know, it's not like a workplace where you can interview people before you get them in, right? If you work at your company, you do an interview, a job interview. If you don't like them, if they're not fitting, if they have a different mindset to you have, you say, no, go away, take that course and come back later. But at the temple, we can't do that. You get people from all, you know, also all walks of life and all sorts. There are people who are the go-getters, and there are people who are just very laid back. Those of you who know us know how much social service we do at our monastery. But all centered and anchored on one thing, Nibbana and Nibbana alone. We live and breathe because we want to attain Nibbana, nothing else. Some of you will know we have plans to set up a rehabilitation center pretty soon. A drug rehabilitation center, because we know how much it has become a problem in this day and age. But the biggest problem with rehabilitation centers today, I'll come back to determination, remind me. The biggest problem that people have who are engaged in this rehabilitation is relapse. Because what they don't know is, how do you stop someone from wanting to take drugs? That they don't know. They can teach them the consequences. They can teach them the consequences. I mean, come on. Consequences are pretty obvious. You just have to go and stand in front of a mirror and you can see it all. You can teach them about the side effects. You can teach them about the harm and the damage that it does. All that is possible. But what you can't stop is to help them stop wanting it. Because people don't know how wanting happens. The best psychologist in the world does not know how wanting happens. So if you look at some of these rehabilitation principles and theories and therapy, I have got nothing against them. They do the best they can. People who work in this profession, people who work in these fields, my God, you know, they work their socks off. They care so much about these young people to help them recover. In a very recent survey that we did in the Sri Lankan prison system, ladies and gentlemen, 14 to 40 year olds, or rather 17 to 40 year olds. I think most of our youth are in prisons these days. I would say almost the majority of our youth are in prisons these days. It costs the taxpayer 7 billion rupees a year just to maintain it. You know, that's just money down the drain. What if we could resuscitate them? What if we could share with them these principles? Because, you know, these are human beings, for heaven's sake. They are men, women, youthful, energy, full of energy. You know, put Nibbanas to aside. What if we could make teachers out of them? What if we could make doctors out of them, engineers out of them, laborers out of them? Matters not. But the problem is relapse. If you don't know how to stop someone from wanting something, no matter how much you try and deprive them of it, soon enough they just go back to it. But we have found the cure. Just like you can stop anything, stop wanting anything, you can also stop wanting drugs. But for that, you need his philosophy. Very soon you will learn all this. Very soon. We have a children's home at the monastery. Young orphans, some of them. Others, parents who voluntarily send their children because they want their children to have a safe upbringing. Because they know that science and math alone is not going to help their children become virtuous citizens. They'll become educated, they'll become intelligent. But they need noble companionship. And in that children's home, we do a special program for them. We teach them. We teach them about, you know, the subjects that you learn at school, but also we teach them good values, principles, and these philosophies that transform them. Anyway, come around when you have a time, sometime, whenever. And you'll get to see some of the things we do there. But I was talking about determination. Determination is needed when it really gets difficult. Because it's very easy not to do. Why? Because you're always surrounded by the naysayers. Like I said, I had that long list. Because of the politicians, we can't become successful. Look at how they mistreat the youth of this country, as I used to say. Because of the economy, because of the taxes. See how high they are? There's no respite for young, hard-working people like us. So I saw young people walking with their placards in hand, reduce the taxes, lower the taxes, give us the jobs. Once again, I've got nothing against them. All I'm saying is, I have adopted a different philosophy in life. Don't go asking for things, become deserving of it, and it'll come to you. I used to complain that the rich people had all the money in the world. Why don't they give it to the poor people? What a fool I was. How naive. Please don't bring your children up like that. Please. Don't have them in a deserving mindset. Like, you know, they deserve someone to come and give them everything. Transform them to a contributing mindset. That is how I changed myself. Thanks to the things I got to read when I was younger. Those philosophies, because they taught you how to transform your life to become successful in a worldly existence. But that's all I knew and used them for. Until that one fine day came along. You know what happened? So that day, did I share that story with you? I did, didn't I? What is Nibbana? It's what you've always had, but you've never known. Imagine you have a best friend. But he's tied to your back, so you've never seen him. So you never know he's there. It's like that. I cannot bring you Nibbana. All I can help you is realize Nibbana. And these sermons are geared towards that, to help you realize Nibbana. But on that journey, ladies and gentlemen, you need to go through a transformation. Your thinking will have to change. Are you prepared for that? I will not ask you to accept anything as gospel. Whatever I share, sat on this seat, I will give you evidence of that. I will always put forward a convincing argument to you. I may not be able to ask, give you an opportunity to ask lots of questions, because if we start doing that, we just won't have enough time to do all of it. But, although I can't read your minds, I can understand where you're coming from, because I've done this a fair few times now. Right from the people that sat at the back, I can see through your eyes, and I can see you right at the front. I don't know much about you, but I care about you. Is that not enough? I care enough to come all the way here. Not enough? You know, at the monastery today, Sunday mornings, you know what everyone does? All of the monks, all of the anagarikas, all of the anagarikas, everyone, we come together and we meditate till the almsgiving in the afternoon. I've given that up to come here for you. That meditation, which was so difficult for me when I first tried to do it, today, I love it. Because I don't just close my eyes and just wander into sleep. I reflect on the truth. And there is nothing more uplifting, more energizing, more revitalizing. Nothing more therapeutic. It's cathartic. Nothing more enjoyable than reflecting on the Dhamma. Dhamma piti rasam pibam, the Buddha says. Drink the Dhamma. Consume the Dhamma and enjoy in the bliss that it brings to you. It's like elixir. Hang in there. Today, believe me because I say so. Tomorrow, you will believe because you feel so. Just hang in there. Hang in there and do one thing. Think about the things I share with you, because I only get this chance once a week to talk to you. But everybody else talks to you all the other days of the week. Right? So I can only have this influencing power on you for 2 hours of 100 and however many hours in the week you have. Seven days you live out there, of that 2 hours you give me to influence you, to talk to you. Yes, I come here to influence you. Not manipulate you, to influence you. I want these words to make a difference in you. I'll be very upfront about that. Sometimes I might sound very harsh and critical. That is because I care. If I know that what you're doing is wrong, I can't look away and pretend that it's okay for you to carry on doing what you're doing. If I care about you, you've come here because you want me to change you, don't you? You've come here because you know something's wrong and you don't know what. You come here and worship at my feet, at the feet of the Mahasangha, seeking refuge. If I am true to my robe, if I am true to the precepts that I have sworn by, if I am true to the refuge that I have sought in the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, I might care less about what you think of me as I give some of the advice that I give you. I might think to myself, if I say this thing, this gentleman is probably going to fall out with me. He might not like me very much after that. But if I know that walking out of here, you'll start thinking about it, and that will make a change in your lives, I will take the liberty of saying it. Because it is not your friendship that I want, ladies and gentlemen. It is your freedom. You know you have lived captivated lives. You know you have lived lives entrapped in desire, aversion, and delusion. You know that the pangs of defilements bother you day and night. They scorch you alive. They burn you. You don't know how to take control of grief when grief comes your way. You know that the only reason you're not crying right now is because you haven't got that phone call to say something's happened to your mother, something happened to your son, something's happened to your house, something's happened to your car, something's happened to your daughter, something's happened to your husband. If you get that phone call right now, the floodgates will open. You know that. You know that the only reason you're not angry right now is because someone hasn't bumped into you yet. Someone hasn't said something to annoy you. Someone hasn't taken something that belongs to you without your permission. That's why you're not angry yet. That's why you're not annoyed. But as you go back onto the street, as you drive your car home today, if someone pulls up in front of you, you'll have a lesson to teach them, won't you? I don't want you to be like that. What if anything could happen in this world and you remained unflustered, unbothered? That's possible. So step by step, one day at a time, we'll go there. We'll get there. That is why today you might have come expecting perhaps for me to describe to you, to expound to you deep concepts of the Dhamma. Again, I have to tell you, don't come here with expectations, because it is your expectation that will bring you grief. If anything, you've taken that lesson today. Don't come here with expectations. Allow me to make that change within you. All you got to do is come. Just turn up. Turn up, sit down, enjoy the ride. I'm your chauffeur. I'll take you around. Let me do that. I'll show you around as well. I'll say, look there, look there. That's the, you know, look at the meadows. Aren't they beautiful? And on the right hand side, you see this beautiful setting, beautiful scenery. Have a look. I'll be your tour guide. I'll be your chauffeur. Let me do that. You just come, take a seat, fasten your seatbelts and enjoy the ride. Just don't get off prematurely. You can get off when you reach your destination and then get on a bus yourself and then carry on asking for passengers to get on that bus. Now you're the driver. You can do that. But just hang in there. Are you up for that? Do we have a deal? Because you will only see a teacher within me when you are prepared to become a student. And don't think of me as a person here. I'm here to only be a radio for the Dhamma that is pristine. What has changed me, ladies and gentlemen, is not a miracle, it's the Dhamma, the message. I'm a messenger. I carry the Buddha's message. As I come clad in a robe, you are willing to listen to what I have to say. And that's great. So allow these words to sink in through your ears, through your heads, down to your hearts, as it makes an internal transformation. As a husband, I can help you become the best husband you can possibly be. I'll help you do that. As a wife, I'll help you become the best wife you could ever be. As a teacher, I'll help you become the best teacher that you could ever be. A teacher that cares. A husband that cares. A wife that cares. Because for all the things we have as a human race, there's one thing we've lost. Humanity. Nibbana is a seed that takes root in a mind that understands humanity. Without that, as I said, don't take a scholarly approach to Nibbana. It's not a subject to study, rather it's an experience to be had. So come on that journey as we take steps forward. Hurt people, you did your homework? Good. So there will have been occasions on which people would have hurt you. What I asked you to do last week was, whenever that happened, take a moment to relax, take a deep breath, and then remind yourself that the only reason they have hurt me is because they are hurt themselves. They are hurt. What they don't know, now you should know. They don't know that when they are hurt, it's because they don't have what they want. And because they want something, what they'll do is they'll try go get it from you. They'll try go steal it from you. They'll try to snatch it from you. Because what they don't understand is, to get something, you have to give it. They don't understand that, but you do. So when hurt people come to you, here's what you can do. Help them. Treat that wound as best you can. I'm not asking you to bend backwards. Bend over backwards. In whatever capacity you can, help them. Perhaps it's a lending ear that you can give them. Perhaps it's a gentle word. You know, if someone bumps into you, just say, you know, you're walking on the corridor, someone comes and bumps into you, right? And you know well and clear it's their mistake. Okay? Tell me, who should say sorry first? Them, right? Who should say sorry first? But they bumped into you. They didn't look where they were going. You were looking where you were going. You went along your path, that path is on there, but they came sideways and they bumped into you. Who should say sorry? Here's my way. I say sorry, because if I wasn't there, they wouldn't have bumped into me. But that's not the only reason. Perhaps the reason that they weren't going straight was because they had something, they had a heavy burden they were carrying in their minds. Maybe they were stressed about something. If I can help them with just one word to help relieve that stress, just one word, and say, oh, I'm so sorry. I hope I haven't bothered you. I hope I haven't been an inconvenience to you. You know what that'll do? It will turn a frown upside down. What's a frown upside down? That's mine. So here's what I want you to do for next week. When you see someone who's a hurt person and they come around hurting you, because that's what hurt people do best, they hurt other people. Become an agent of the Buddha. Become an agent of the Sangha. And become someone who can turn a frown upside down. All you got to do is wear a smile on your face. It'll be difficult, I know. Especially when you feel, but I am the one who has been injusticed. I am the one who's been treated unfairly. It could be even at home. Say your husband's having a go at you. Your wife's having a go at you. Don't retaliate. It's difficult. But you promise me, you're here for a change. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be incredibly difficult, I tell you. How do I know this? Which book did I read that in? It's called The Book of Life. Been there, done that. I'm happy as happy can be today, ladies and gentlemen, because I went through that transformational change. In a few weeks' time, we'll be starting to talk about concepts of Nibbana. It'll blow your brains out. I promise you. The regulars will know about this. Some of the concepts that we talk about at the monastery, you walk into the sermon like this, you walk out of the sermon like this. Oof, oh, your head. Yeah, that's what we do 24/7. We spend our time in the Dhamma, and the Dhamma can be, it's as vast as the vast ocean. The deeper you go, the deeper it gets. So soon enough, we'll start talking about deep concepts of the Dhamma, which will impress you no end. Because you will begin to understand that they have answers to the problems in life for no other reason. We're not impressed in the Buddha because he was the Buddha. We are impressed in the Buddha because he had problems to the answers, or the problems to the, sorry, the solutions to the problems in our lives. That's why. I take refuge in him, not because he's the Buddha. I take refuge in him because he had the solutions to the problems in my life. Today, you can't annoy me. I dare you. Try, if you can. Today, you can't make me cry. I dare you. Try if you can. It's not possible today. Thanks to the Buddha, thanks to the Dhamma, and thanks to my teachers who represent the Mahasangha. I'm not saying my journey is complete. I've still yet to go. Someone asked me this question. Swaminathan, aren't you fear of death? I told you about this last week. Aren't you worried of dying? I'm very worried of dying because my journey is not complete yet. I still have a bit further to go. Until then, I have to hang in there. But that transformation I can help happen within you. So hang in there, engage in merits, and be a person who can put a smile on somebody else's face. You know, you look beautiful when you smile. Do you agree? Do you? See? You are. All I had to say was, you look beautiful when you smile. And you're all smiling. It's not difficult, is it? People live such lives of hardship, ladies and gentlemen. Impoverished, hurting, bleeding. They live such painful lives. Help them as best you can. I'm not saying write them off, you know, all your property to them. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just asking for a very simple thing that doesn't cost you a penny. Put a smile on their face. So become an agent of change, become an agent of the Buddha, someone who can put a frown upside down. You got a deal? Alright, I'll see you next week then. Before we conclude, let us take a moment to transfer the merits that we have all acquired. And as we transfer these merits, let us also remind ourselves how grateful we should be to everyone who's helped make this program a success. We are here today without any fear. You have the comfort of this auditorium. All of this has been made available to us because of the generosity and charity with which people wish to treat you. So what they know, that whatever they give, they shall get. All right. Let's take a moment then to transfer the merits we have all acquired today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching. And with immense gratitude, let us transfer this merits to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Sripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also take a moment to transmit to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and for the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to my teacher, Guru Swami Nuhanse, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and including the Anagarikas and the Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all who take great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these talks, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. Take a moment, please, now to remind yourselves of those who invited you to be here today and come along. May they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. By the merits that we have all acquired, by the power and the blessings of all these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves from those woeful plains. Be born in the blissful plains, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, uncles, aunts, nephews, nieces, grandparents, friends, acquaintances, employers and employees, and to all those who helped us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape or form that is possible to them. May by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May by the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfil the meritorious deeds, fulfil the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the Devas and Brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves to protect the Sambuddha Sasana and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to your guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May by the power of these merits they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to those who have predeceased us, to our ancestors, to our forefathers, and to those who have made our lives comfortable as we know it today. By the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the members of the armed forces, as well as the police force, who sacrifice their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. It is thanks to them that today we can be here, listen to the Dhamma, engage in the path, and attain to Nibbana without any fear, without any worries. May these merits that we have all acquired be transferred to them. May they all rejoice in these merits. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to all those who lost their lives to natural calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, forest fires, pandemics, blizzards and so on. Reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us this infinite long journey of samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to them. May by the power of these merits they, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may by the power of all the merits we have all acquired today, you and I, and everyone who's helped make this program a success, become an arahat unvahanse, an arahat theranin vahanse, in this very life itself, and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. And the members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you.
Raga ginnan nidatnva Dvesha ginnan nidatnva Moha ginnan nidatnva Nibbana parama sukhayam sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayam sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayam sukhita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivan sap labeva Nivan sap labeva Nivan sap labeva
Tundravange suvisi ananta maha guna belin Sila loka sila sattayoma Nibbana paramasukhen sukhita taravetva Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.